To celebrate the fact that Allagash White 12 Packs are ready for any adventure, we're sending one lucky winner on an adventure to Maine. Enter for your chance to win at Allagash.com. Must be 21 years or older. Please drink responsibly.
Thanks for listening to our upcoming podcast on Erskine Radio. It's an honor. It's a pleasure because we've got one of the best shows ever. Dr. Merrill Nass talking about the coronavirus. We've got James Simpson talking about who was Karl Marx, and Selwyn Duke, who is going to be talking about the acceptance con and much more. Selwyn Duke has written for The New American, still does, for a decade. He's also written for The Hill, The Observer, The American Conservative, WorldNet Daily, American Thinker, and many other print and online publications, all of them great. In addition, he's contributed to college textbooks published by Cengage Learning. He's appeared as a frequent guest on television and radio. We're going to discuss, as I said, the acceptance con and much, much more. His website is SelwynDuke.com and American Thinker, the new American Thinker.com. And we're in a fight. We're in a fight for the literal. I'm not saying heart and soul, like you say in a song or something. This is the literal heart and soul of America, and our heart and our souls. And not only for America, but for the world. Think of the brave people, the brave men and women in Cuba. We have to fight for them too. But we've got the acceptance con, a misguided tolerance ensures an intolerable future. This is about tolerance versus principle. It's about continued tolerance leads to acceptance and abnormal becoming accepted. It's never normal, but it's accepted. We can't do this. If we don't stand for something, we'll fall for anything. I know, Selwyn, you love to quote G.K. Chesterton, tolerance is a virtue, man without convictions. A virtuous man without convictions. Tolerance means you don't have anything that you stand for. If you don't stand for something, you'll fall for anything. And that is the playbook of the Democratic Party right now, isn't it, Selwyn?
Well, it is. It is, absolutely. And Erskine, you stole my opening line there. I was going to quote Chesterton.
He is absolutely correct.
I hardly ever quote him, but actually people who listen to me know that I quote him more than anyone else. But anyway, you know, the bottom line is this. Tolerance is something that's highly misunderstood. Tolerance is not a virtue. It's the virtue of the man without convictions, as Chesterton said. And what we have to understand, Erskine, is that tolerance always implies a negative. Okay, you wouldn't have to tolerate a beautiful new car or a delectable meal. You relish those things. But
sure,
you would have to tolerate bad weather or a very, very terrible cold.
But there's nothing you can do about either one of those. There's nothing you can do about them, right?
Right. Right. So if you say that you're tolerant of something, you're saying that you view that thing as a negative. That's the first thing to understand. The next thing to understand is that tolerance is only virtuous when exercised in two situations. One situation is where it's something that you view as a negative, but that's not really a negative, and you tolerate it for some greater good. Like, I go to someone's house, and he serves me a vegetable I don't like, but it's good for me, and I don't want to insult him, so I tolerate it and I eat it. The second situation in which tolerance is virtuous is where the thing that you're perceiving as a negative really is a negative, but you can't do anything about it, like a bad cold. It's much better if you keep a stiff upper lip than if you just sit around whining like a little kid, right?
Right.
That's virtuous. But if you're talking about something that really is bad, really is negative, that can be eliminated, if you nonetheless tolerate it, then you're complicit in the promotion of that negative, bad, deleterious thing. In that case, virtue lies only in wiping that negative out. Now, let's move on with the acceptance con. The problem is that not only have people forgotten this, what I just articulated, Erskine, but conservatives in the United States, and I used to be like this myself when I was a younger man, tend to have a lot of libertarian streaks in them, and they tend to have an attitude that says, live and let live. And this causes them to take a hands-off approach with respect to the culture. In fact, I remember I was talking to this wonderful man, a judge who's not actually a lawyer in upstate New York. Up there, you don't have to be a lawyer to be a judge, believe it or not. Ex-Marine, good conservative, votes Republican. But we got to discussing the culture war, and he said very emphatically, I don't want to fight any culture war. Well, guess what? If that's your attitude, that means not only will you lose the culture, but you're going to lose the political realm ultimately, because politics is downstream from culture. And the way I illustrate this is this way. We know that there are governmental laws. We're going to have them, like it or not. It's just a question of how many, who's going to craft them, and what their nature will be. So what this means is that if you don't craft the laws and people who agree with you, people who disagree with you will be crafting the laws. Well, here's the thing. It's the same thing in the social realm, Erskine, because there we have social laws. They're often called conventions or traditions or social codes, but they're very, very significant. I mean, Confucius said, the Chinese sage talking about this, that they were so powerful that you were better off governing people with ritual, as he called it, these social laws, than with governmental laws. Mm-hmm. But you have these social laws, and they're like governmental laws in that if you and the people who agree with you don't craft them, the people who disagree with you will. Now, the kicker is this. Once that happens, once you have the wrong kinds of social laws in place, and they become widespread enough, widely accepted enough, and people become passionate enough about them, guess what happens? They start to become legislated, because that's human nature, and that's why politics is downstream from culture, and that's why if you don't fight and win the culture war, you're not just going to lose the culture, you're going to lose the political realm, and that's why I often say, if you don't control the culture will control you.
Let's give a couple of specific examples. One is with the abortion issue. The another one that's very strong is the Islamic issue. And the other one that's very strong that we're seeing right now, because Islam, unlike most of the other religions, they want to destroy the Western world. The abortion issue is destroying Americans. It's destroying life. It cheapens life. And this cannot be allowed, because life is precious. All life is precious that was given to us by God. And especially it's decimating the black community. We've also got the other issue of homosexuality, where men can walk into women's bathrooms and pretend that they're a woman. They can also be in various sports and things like that, which is decimating women's sports. This is another issue where you can't, if you don't control the culture, it controls you. Moral isn't about you, but it's about truth, but it's about God's morality tied to respect for law. If you don't have morality and you don't have respect for the law, you don't have respect for the law, then we have no freedom. The only people running around free are the criminals. We're seeing this in California and elsewhere, and the entire society devolves into anarchy. This is what they want, order out of chaos. They aren't even going to create order. Their order comes at the end of a gun, and they want the chaos to destroy the Western civilization. And I think it begins with the control of the culture, and it begins with morality. This is where we've got to get back to. Comment on that, please, Selwyn.
Yeah, well, absolutely. Look, we have something now, Erskine, that we call cancel culture. What is that? It's just an intensification of political correctness, which has been around for a long time. But that's really the name for the left's group of social codes and the social pressure that is used to enforce them. I was talking about social laws. You have them right there. If you oppose the things that you just articulated, the so-called transgender agenda, which I correctly call the made-up sexual status or MUS agenda, or you oppose so many other things that the left wants to elevate, you can suffer career and reputational destruction. And that's what I mean. This is why you must fight and prevail in these culture wars. I mean, look, the so-called MUS agenda. If you say now that men shouldn't be playing in women's sports, that's seen as being controversial, or that boys shouldn't be going in girls' bathrooms. It's just absolutely unbelievable. And this is in deference to what? It's in deference to an agenda that is wholly and completely unscientific. as I've illustrated in print for years and years and years. I mean, I've written more about this must issue than just about any other commentator, more than I ever cared to be honest with you. So it's not really hard to win this debate, but we have to be willing to do it. And we need to be braver here also. You know, I think how Thomas Jefferson, I believe it was Erskine, said during the American Revolution, if we do not all hang together, we will most certainly all hang separately.
Right.
This is the same thing, except that we're not faced with actually being hanged by the neck until we're dead. We're not faced with being thrown into an arena to lions like the ancient Christians in the Roman Empire, or the early Christians, I should say. All we have to do is put far less on the line, our reputation, and maybe our jobs sometimes. But if we're not going to stand up, if we can't risk even that, then quite frankly, we don't deserve to prevail in this cultural and political battle. And we will get what we deserve then, because cowardice breeds what? You know, cowards are not going to win anything. They say faint heart never won fair lady. Well, faint heart never won fair culture either. It never won fair civilization.
Well, in a debate in England, which I thought was one of the best statements I've ever heard, Gladstone and Disraeli, and I think Gladstone looked at Disraeli and said, either you're going to die of some loathsome disease or be hanged. And Disraeli replied, that all depends on whether I embrace your mistress or your principles. So you've got to stand up for your principles. You've got to stand up for your principles and what you believe and what you know is right. If you don't, we are going to lose not only America, but the world. And you are going to lose in every aspect because they will control the culture. It will control you. Now, the other thing that you were watching is the hatred that's being taught by Joe Biden. He believes kids should be taught to hate America. 36% of the young people proud to be American. 36% are proud to be American. When we went to school, Selwyn, now I'm not saying this like geezers or something. We were all proud of America. We were all proud of America. White House Press Secretary Jen Psaki said Biden supports of teaching the critical race theory. It's a theory. It isn't a fact. It's a theory, and not even a good theory. He believes teaching our challenging history. Our challenging history? We overcame more than anybody. We've overcome more. We've done more good. How much territory did we take in World War II? It's only the territory to bury our dead. That was it. We never overtook countries. Dark moments in our history of systemic racism. Who did the systemic racism? It was your party, Mr. Biden. And believe, as she believes, the kid can learn our history. Now, this is what they're talking about. This is what they're doing in schools today. This is horrible to be indoctrinating children with this. It's horrible. We get back, Selwyn. Let's talk about this. What do you say?
Absolutely, absolutely. I guess we're going to a break.
We are, and when you talk about the children's indoctrination, then that's going to affect us for the future of America. We have had an entire cadre of children who have been poisoned by this all the way from elementary school, even before. Their boys started 3 years old, teaching sex education all the way through to college.
Yeah.
More when we return with Selwyn Duke. Less of me, more of Selwyn when we come back. The Biden administration is quickly moving to implement the liberal fantasy of socialist spending. After spending a $2.1 trillion stimulus, the president and Democratic-led Congress have introduced another $3 trillion plan to add to our insurmountable debt, seeking to raise taxes on Americans making as little as $200,000 a year. Have you seen the immigration footage? 87 million putting illegals in hotel rooms and our troops sleeping on parking garage floors. Could this be the biggest single gold buying opportunity in history? Well, Wells Fargo and Goldman Sachs say this is the time to buy gold. Patriot Gold Group, where your IRA or 401k can be in physical gold and silver, and you may qualify for a no-fee-for-life IRA. Call 800-356-4470 for details. Patriot Gold Group, Consumer Affairs' top-rated gold IRA dealer, 5 years running. Call 800-356-4470 today. We're talking with Selwyn Duke. Go up to his website, selwynduke.com. The American Federation of Teachers President, Randy Weingarten, she's going to defend teachers who are punished for teaching honest history, as she calls it. States like Oklahoma, they banned it, critical race theory. But she wants to defend teachers who are punished for teaching honest history. Is this what we've come to, Selwyn? This is what we've come to? This is the teachers' union, for goodness sake. Are they talking anything about academics? No, everything they talk about is critical race theory and changing America, changing kids so that they will come out as good little followers of who? Of the country? No. Followers of Joe Biden? Are you kidding? That's what they're teaching them. What do you think, Selwyn? What's with the schools and its kids today?
Absolutely. Look, the bottom line is this. The apocryphal saying goes, the teaching in the schools today will be the politics of tomorrow. I know that's attributed to Lincoln, but actually he didn't say it. And it's absolutely true. And Exactly. Well, I didn't originate it. But anyway, this indoctrination has been going on for a very, very long time in the schools, unfortunately. It's a big part of the reason why we're in the morass we're in. But now parents are starting to notice it because the left has made the stupid mistake, I would characterize it as, of trying to boil the frog too quickly, if you know what I mean. They've turned up that heat really high with this critical race theory nonsense. Now, what does critical race theory basically state? Well, it holds that the world is divided into the oppressed and oppressors. The latter would be white people. They say that in no uncertain terms, or at least they put it this way. Whiteness, quote-unquote, needs to be eliminated, and whiteness is euphemism for white people in this case, absolutely positively. Now, there are people on the left, Erskine, who want to deny that critical race theory is in schools. And if it's not, then it's there by another name. But here's a good example. And this comes by way of Christopher Rufo, who's a journalist who's done a lot of great work on this front. He wrote, at least 25 public school districts in 12 states are now teaching Not My Idea, a book that claims whiteness is the devil, luring children with the promise of, quote, stolen land and stolen riches. This book is actually in schools, and it's just one example. Now, I want to point out, yes, critical race theory, Erskine, is overtly anti-white, but it also hurts black and Hispanic kids. Now, usually when people say that, they're being politically correct. They just want to find a PC way of marketing their opposition to the thing they're inveighing against. I'm not doing that. The reason why this critical race theory hurts black and Hispanic kids is that what it does is it says that the traits, the characteristics of successful people like punctuality, future time orientation, industriousness, and many others that they mention are white traits. That's what they actually call them. So what they're doing is they're demonizing virtues and their derivatives, things you need to be happy and successful in life in the eyes of black and Hispanic kids. And anyone who would tell you that virtue is vice and vice is virtue, that good is bad, is the worst person you could ever have in your life. He's no friend of yours, and you should run 100 miles from such a person. Now, that's fairly obvious. Let's dig a little deeper, though, into what Jen Psaki, the White House press secretary, said. When she was asked whether Biden supported critical race theory, Erskine, she didn't say straight out that he did, but as you mentioned, she said that he believes that kids have to learn challenging history and that the United States has many dark moments. But as you pointed out, I mean, what country doesn't have many dark moments?
Right.
Russia, China, they have dark moments. China is authoring many more dark moments today, but guess what? Those countries and others still manage to teach a positive view of their own history to kids and instill those kids with national pride.
A lot of difference, and if you look at it, you're talking about China, you're talking about communist nations. How many people have they killed? How many people have they murdered? How many people died here? Civil War, 600,000. Fighting for what? Fighting for freedom for all. We'll be right back with Selwyn Duke. SelwynDuke.com. The amazing Selwyn Duke. And NewAmerica.com.
Could this be the biggest single gold buying opportunity in history? Well, Wells Fargo and Goldman Sachs say this is the time to buy gold. Patriot Gold Group, where your IRA or 401k can be in physical gold and silver, and you may qualify for a no-fee-for-life IRA. Call 800-356-4470 for details. Patriot Gold Group, Consumer Affairs top-rated gold IRA dealer, 5 years running. Call 800-356-4470 today.
Part of what they want to do, not only control the hearts and minds of the children, which is the future, but they also want to do away with Christianity. This is the first thing that happened with the COVID. They came in with, we have to have a lockdown, you can't go to church. In Canada, they are arresting people who just holding a church service. They're arresting ministers. This is the first thing that they did, was shut down the churches. With this critical race theory, it's going to dissipate to where you don't have a Protestant work ethic. They're saying you're being used by the man with your work ethic, work hard and get ahead. It doesn't work. So what are you supposed to do? Get everything from the government? Well, sure, they become the new God. They can give you everything. But a government big enough to give you everything is also strong enough to take it away. And this is leading the lambs to slaughter. This is exactly what happens in every socialist totalitarian government. So what we've got is the result of cultural decay, inability to rationally discuss issues. Facts don't matter. It's what you feel, what you think, and what you believe. And what you feel, think, and believe is not necessarily according to your will, but it isn't according to God's will. We've got to turn back. We've got to restore morality. And we have to not follow the culture of the world. Be in the world, but don't be of the world. Go ahead, your turn. I'm sorry, Selwyn. I just got all excited about what you were saying.
No, you put that very well. I just wanted to address what Jen Psaki said about critical race theory and why essentially the administration was supporting it. So one thing is this notion that she put forth that we have to teach kids history. Well, first of all, innumerable things happened in American history. We can't even teach a small percentage of them, so we necessarily must cherry-pick from among them. What do we choose? Do we choose the worst things from among them? That doesn't make much sense. As we said before, all countries have many dark moments. And I point out in my article on this subject, you know, any psychologist worth his salt, all six of them, would tell you on a personal level that it's one thing to remember the past, but it's another thing to wallow in the past to a point where it damages you psychologically. And essentially, that's what we're doing. But here's the thing. I like to illustrate these things with analogies. And here's a really good analogy. We all know when you have children, that even when they're very young, Erskine, they start to want to know certain things about mommy's and daddy's history. And so maybe you might tell them where mommy and daddy went to college, their accomplishments, their achievements, so on and so forth. Okay, you don't take the worst things you ever did and relate them to an 11-year-old child. You're not going to say, mommy had all these one-night stands and was really disastrous, blah, 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 and mommy did these illegal drugs and she got drunk and ended up vomiting all day, all these things, because then you would be scandalizing yourself in the child's eyes. You don't do that. Now, I would point out here that Jen Psaki herself has two young children, and some people might say, you know, it might be a good idea to give her an object lesson in the folly of her ideas. Maybe her kids should be told about her many dark moments, and I really suspect there are many of them in her past. But you know what? I wouldn't do that even if I knew her sins, Erskine. And you know why? Because it would hurt her kids. They deserve better than that. And it's the same thing here. When you teach kids a very negative history of the United States, you're not just hurting the country, and you're hurting the country because if people start to believe it's a misbegotten place that offers nothing good, then why wouldn't they think it should be torn up root and branch? But you not only hurt the country, you hurt the kids, because you're creating young people who are moored to nothing, who are rootless, who don't have any sense of positive national identity. That's not good at all. Where are they going to find their identity? Maybe in gangs and worst-case scenarios? No, this is a terrible thing. If you love these kids, you instill them with national pride, a proper national pride. George Orwell said, Erskine, the best way to destroy a people is to obliterate their own understanding of their history. And that's exactly what is happening. And I would also point out that if you want to talk about things such as slavery and human rights, then talk about the positive things we've done in that regard. Remember, the United States did not originate slavery. It was born into a world in which slavery was status quo. It had been going on since time immemorial. But what did the United States do? It was one of the very first countries to eliminate slavery. That's a striking fact of history that everyone should be proud of. The West, the United States included, was not the first entity to violate human rights, but the West was the entity that created our whole modern conception of human rights. That's another striking fact of history, and that's something else we should be immensely proud of. So the truth here does not indict the United States, not at all. The truth completely exonerates the United States and, in fact, elevates her. And all
the truth,
we have to do
truth
is
will set you
children.
Free.
That's
a couple of things. Number one, absolutely. When they're talking about critical race theory, there is a fact that there were blacks who owned slaves. There's another fact that today
right.
slavery is still existing in the Muslim world. Another fact is regarding slavery that not only did blacks own slaves, but also American Indians owned slaves because they were listed when the Cherokee went on Salagee, a very bad thing, but they took them out to Oklahoma. They listed slaves as their property. So let's talk about what's going on with genocide. Soviet Union, 20 million killed. Communist China, 65 million killed. Nazi Germany killed 6 million. Vietnam, 3.8 million dead, including 250,000 boat people died trying to get out. Cambodia, 2 million killed. North Korea, 2 million killed. Afghanistan, 1.5 million killed. Africa, 1.7. Eastern Europe, 1 million. Latin America, 150,000. Iraq under Saddam, 190,000. Cuba, 35 to 141,000. That's the result of socialism, boys and girls. That's the result of socialism. Let's teach the people the truth, not what they're teaching in school, not the stuff that they're learning. And let's also teach people the civility, a certain amount of civility. Stop your cussing. Stop using words that send violence, hate, anger. Result of our cultural decay and inability to rationally discuss issues comes out in cuss words. You can't turn TV on where they're not cussing and laughing about. You can't go see a comedy show where they're, especially the black comedians, it really makes them look bad, where they cuss during half the thing and people go titter, titter, titter because they're talking about duty or some silly thing like that. But it's worse than that because they're using actual cuss words. And people are laughing at it. It isn't funny. It shows stupidity. Now, Larry the Cable Guy said you can't fix stupid, but you can certainly fix this type of stupidity by letting people know it's not acceptable. It never was acceptable, and now it's everywhere. Disney's using it. Everybody's using it. Everywhere, everything. You watch a movie. Well, watch a good movie. I thought My Cousin Vinny was very good. It's a good movie. Joe Piscopo, forgot who was in it. He was extremely good. It was Pesci. He was wonderful at it. But they had so many cuss words in there. They do that with all the movies. I'm thinking, why do they do it? Why do they have to put that many in? And they just do it. It is done for effect, and its effect is to turn me off. I said, you know, there are certain movies you can't watch because there's too much cussing. This is what they're giving to us. This is becoming the norm. This is changing society. People can't talk without cussing. And there are certain things that make me want to cuss, but you have to take a deep breath, and certain times you want to cuss and say, they can't be doing this. We, instead of cussing about it, we need to laugh about it. We need to laugh at them, not cuss them out, laugh at them. Let them know how stupid and their folly. But this cursing, this has gotten way out of hand, hasn't it? Not that I'm a prude. I'm
well,
not.
Well, it has.
But...
It is.
Mm-hmm.
You know, what you're alluding to is that essay I wrote some years ago titled Cussing and Cultural Decay. And I've written about this on a few occasions. And one time when I did, I had someone write to me, a reader, who said, you know, Duke, we're not all little Lord Fauntleroys out here, blah, blah, blah. And my response is, well, believe it or not, I grew up in the Bronx, so I heard it all back then. And believe it or not, I said some of it, too. But
sure.
I've come
well,
to understand then. That cursing is wrong, and that's why I cease doing those things. Now, what I point out to people is we all talk about MAGA, Make America Great Again. I've pointed out that you can't MAGA unless you MAMA, Make America Moral Again.
Right.
Edmund Burke, the great Anglo-Irish philosopher Erskine, said, it is ordained in the eternal constitution of things that men of intemperate minds cannot be free. Their passions forge their fetters. 'Twas ever thus. Great thinkers throughout the ages have expressed that thought in different words. And it's very important, if we want to make America moral again, that we cultivate virtue in ourselves. And cleaning up our mouths is part of that. It absolutely is. No, it's not all of it. It's not even a majority of it. But it is part of it. And this was understood many years ago reflexively. I would say to people, if you want to use profanity, what would your great-grandparents think? What would they have said? What would a minister or a priest who you really respect say? What did the father of our nation have to say? George Washington. Well, here's an order he issued in 1776 to the troops. He wrote, the general is sorry to be informed that the foolish and wicked practice of profane cursing and swearing, a vice hitherto little known in our American army, is growing into fashion. He hopes that the officers will, by example as well as influence, endeavor to check it, and that both they and the men will reflect that we can little hope of the blessing of heaven on our army if we insult it by our impiety and folly. Added to this, it is a vice so mean and low, without any temptation, that every man of sense and character detests and despises it. Absolutely true. That's what
wow.
the general had to say. Cursing coarsens society. It absolutely does. And by the way, if you're a believer, what does the Bible have to say about this? Colossians. But now you must put them all away. Anger, wrath, malice, slander, and obscene talk from your mouth. James. From the same mouth come blessing and cursing. My brothers, these things ought not to be so. What I would point out to people is that this is an ugly, ugly habit. And who normalized it? Because young conservatives especially, you'll notice they often curse quite a bit, just like everyone else. Well, Hollywood normalized this
right,
by putting
right.
profanity in movies and shows increasingly over time. They inured the population to it. So when I see conservatives now using the speech patterns of the left, you know what it brings to mind? Something else, Erskine, that G.K. Chesterton said. He said, the business of progressives is to go on making mistakes. The business of conservatives is to make sure mistakes are not corrected. Don't be that guy. Don't be the caboose to the locomotive of liberalism, to its locomotive of societal decay and change. Strike a better path. Beat a better path. Be more virtuous. And cleaning up your mouth is part of it. It's a very important part of it. You know, the bottom line is this. If we were to look at children, let's say 9-year-olds, and we saw them cursing like a drunken sailor, what would we think? Wouldn't we say, you know, that really is ugly? Because when we see children, we want to see that child like innocence.
Right.
Well, we are children of God. What do you think he thinks of us when we're running around with these foul mouths? If you don't believe in God, okay, then use that as a thought exercise. But it's not a good thing at all, and we shouldn't play it down.
The other thing that they are coming in with was saving civilization. You wrote an article, and this is really weird, means killing equality. Well, I thought you were going to talk about equity, which is everyone having everything equal, which is certainly not going to happen, but killing equality. And you said, well, think about it this way. Socialism is inherent virtue is equal. sharing of misery. So that's your equality, is a sharing of misery. That's according to Churchill. And when you're looking at equality, we have no right to equality. All men are created equal with certain inherent rights, and that means there are certain things that you have an equal opportunity. To make everyone equal takes us down to mediocrity, whereas I feel like we need to use meritocracy. You can't have everyone equal because not everyone is qualified or has the mental capacity to be a brain surgeon. We can learn something from everyone. Not everyone has the ability to be a auto mechanic. Not everyone has the ability to fly an airplane. Some people are just afraid of flying. Not everyone has, and you can go right on down the list. Everyone has something that they're better at than someone else, and everyone has something that they can't do. So equality is a myth, isn't it? It's a ruse.
Well, it is. It is. I know that you probably would have thought that I was going to talk about equity, which is just a euphemism for officially sanctioned discrimination now. But actually, right. I've long taken issue with the notion of equality itself. Now, you have to understand a little history here. Equality was not something emphasized in Western civilization at all until the so-called Enlightenment. And then it wasn't just emphasized by some of the founding fathers, but also by socialists. Socialism.
Let's talk about that when we get back, because socialism and equality when we return with Selwyn Duke. The great Selwyn Duke. SelwynDuke.com and also America, the new America.com. Could this be the biggest single gold buying opportunity in history? Well, Wells Fargo and Goldman Sachs say this is the time to buy gold. Patriot Gold Group, where your IRA or 401k can be in physical gold and silver, and you may qualify for a no-fee-for-life IRA. Call 800-356-4470 for details. Patriot Gold Group, Consumer Affairs top-rated gold IRA dealer, 5 years running. Call 800-356-4470 today. One of the great things that can save civilization, not just America, civilization, killing the notion of equality, trying to make everything seem equal. It doesn't work. Male, female, we're all the same. No, we're not. This was an issue that I noticed that even doctors were saying, we can't tell the sex of a baby. Well, open your eyes and look. Excuse me. They can't tell the sex of a baby. It's getting insane. It's getting insane, Selwyn.
It really is. It really is. And this is why I've often pushed back against the concept of equality itself. Now, I have great respect for the founding fathers, Erskine. I often quote them. But I will say, I'm not going to shrink from saying this, that I do believe they made a mistake by using the word equality. Because if you look at what it's degenerated into, you realize it's been a complete disaster. Because unfortunately, people have come to believe, many people, that all groups are equal in terms of worldly capacities. Well, science dictates otherwise, but the bottom line is this. If you believe that all groups are equal in terms of worldly capacities, then what's going to happen when you see reality, which is that different groups perform differently at various endeavors? Well, you're going to conclude that difference in performance must be due to discrimination, other than just discrimination, because after all groups are equal. What else could explain it? And then what's going to happen is that you're going to embark upon social engineering to eliminate this imaginary discrimination. And then, of course, you're embracing a cure that's not just worse than the disease, but that is the disease, because there is no disease to cure in the first place. And we see that in our society. All over the place.
Cure a disease that doesn't exist. Right. I love that.
Right. I mean, I remember, because I'm old enough to, in the 1990s when the feminists, some of them anyway, were swearing up and down that the only reason why men outperformed women in sports was that men had greater opportunities, and that once that equalized, women would catch up to men athletically. And that's why when I see the so-called transgender men entering female sports and dominating, I have to say it's just the feminists being hoisted on their own petards, because they really laid the foundation for this whole thing. But that's just one example. There are so many, though. I mean, for instance, the notion of income gaps. I was writing an article today about how many young people are upset about income inequality, but they don't understand a simple truth here. Equality tells you nothing about quality. The analogy I like to use here is you have two tennis centers teaching children tennis, right? After a certain period of time, at one of them, all the kids are advanced beginners. After the same period of time, at the second tennis center, some kids are advanced beginners, some are intermediates, some are advanced intermediates. A smaller group constitutes advanced players, and then you have a few moving towards tournament level. Now, at which tennis center do you have greater equality? At the first one. But at which tennis center are the kids doing far better overall? At the second one. Equality tells you nothing about quality, nothing at all. And that's why it's not something we should ever focus on. And it's completely unscientific to embrace this notion that we're equal in any kind of a worldly sense. If you look at nature, Erskine, do you see equality? No, what you see is that certain species are better suited for survival in a given environment than other species. You see, even within species, some members are stronger, faster, bigger, hardier than others. And this is true not just of animals, but plants as well and insects. So focusing on equality is completely incorrect. Now, I know what people are thinking. They're thinking, wait a second, Duke, this is a very dangerous road to go down. If we dispense with equality, won't there be a lot of injustice? No, not if we replace it with, as architect Buckminster Fuller might have said, a better model. And what is that model? It's one that's been around for thousands of years. That's the virtue model. Virtue refers to that set of good moral habits. And the virtues that are relevant here would be ones such as justice and charity and kindness. How does that work? Well, if you're justice-oriented, you're not going to discriminate against someone in job hiring simply because he's of a certain race, because that would be patently unjust. However, you might say it's okay to have the following inequality. It's okay to have only young men register for the draft and not young women, which, by the way, we still embrace in this society, that norm, because the sexes are inherently different. And within the military, it's also okay to accept the inequality of saying women can't go into combat. Again, because the sexes are inherently different.
We need equality of opportunity, but we have to be judgmental that there are differences. It's not judgmental, it's just being honest. Let's be honest and return honesty and morality. To save the country, we've got to get back to God. We've got to get back to prayer. Does make a difference. It really does. Selvin, I'll tell you that. I'm telling you that, and you know it in your heart. In your heart.
Absolutely.
We need to
Amen.
Get down and pray to God. He's the only one who can save us. Hey, thanks for listening to this podcast. We got lots more, so be sure to come back.
Hi, I'm Randy, and this is Dave.
We're the founders of Bombas, the most comfortable socks in the history of feet.
So comfortable, we sold and donated millions of pairs.
To sell and donate a lot of socks, we became obsessed with comfort.
We reinvented the sock from the ground up, adding comfort innovations along the way.
It worked. People tried them, loved them, told their friends about them.
Helping us sell and donate millions of pairs.
Try them now at bombas.com/comfy and get 20% off your first order. That's bombas.com/comfy.
To celebrate the fact that Allagash White 12 Packs are ready for any adventure, we're sending one lucky winner on an adventure to Maine. Enter for your chance to win at Allagash.com. Must be 21 years or older. Please drink responsibly.